Hello, everybody.
Hey.
It's episode 81 of the Big Planet Comics Podcast.
81.
81. Yeah, that's a lot of episodes, you guys.
We are episode heavy.
We are 9 times 9. yeah, indeed. So,
Illuminati.
So what's going on, you guys? Oh, my name is Kevin.
Okay.
I forgot how this show works.
Yeah, we've had a whole week since last week, and we forgot.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
And you can check us out on the internet, all over the internet.
on iTunes. The Yelp.
Yep. Yeah, oh, Yelp. Give us reviews on Yelp.
You should.
Yeah, actually.
If you like us.
Say our stores are great. What have you guys been up to?
A little bit of this, a little bit of that. I went to karaoke for my friend's birthday. It was pretty fun.
Karaoke?
What was your go-to tune?
Watching the Detectives. That one's always pretty good.
Nice.
It's easy to sing.
Yeah.
Is that from The Great Mouse Detective?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else did I do? I had Mother's Day on Sunday. Right. Went out with my uncle and my aunt and my cousin.
Happy mother and my mom.
Your mom? Okay, yeah. I was like, that's really mean.
Yeah. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there.
Yep.
To all you mamas.
And my dad stayed home. He's so lazy.
He's really?
He's like, I don't want to get dressed up and
go. Wow.
And then
he's like, she's your mother.
That's kind of what I'm always like. I'm like, why?
We got back and he's like, where'd you guys go? We're like, we went to a steak place. He's like, oh, damn it. He's like, what am I going to eat? And like, he had like leftover food. He's like, oh, sucks. I should have come. It's like, yeah, you should.
The moral of the story is go out for Mother's Day.
Yeah.
What about you, Jared?
I was riding the bus on Mother's Day and it came up to a bus stop and this woman just kind of leans in the front door and she's like, happy Mother's Day to all the ladies. I was just like, what is going on?
That's awesome.
That's great. I went to see Anthony Bourdain do his show.
Was he cooking?
Nope. He was talking about his TV show and doing anecdotes.
Weird.
I know. I was like, I didn't quite know what I was getting into here, and this is...
It would be really weird if he was cooking.
That'd be great.
It would have been amazing if he was cooking.
Does he really cook, though? I mean, I guess he cooks, but
he's a cook.
He's more of like a food guy.
He's more like a celeb.
Yeah. He's not like a chef. I guess is he a chef?
Yeah, he's a chef.
I guess so.
Does he actually still have restaurants, though?
I don't know.
I don't know if he actually cooks.
I don't know anything about
anymore.
He writes comics.
Yeah, right.
Oh, God.
It seems like he just goes around and eats.
Yeah, he writes comics. Shia LaBeouf writes comics.
Yeah.
All the best celebrities.
My world's upside down.
It's true. I don't know what I did. I listened to the new Daft Punk album. I don't like it.
Really?
I listened to
the... You don't like any of it?
No.
Wow.
I still listen to it.
There are definitely a couple songs I really don't like.
Oh, that's true. But I was listening to it. They had an NPR interview with him on the way over, and I was like, look at...
Were they like... Yeah.
Some of the songs sound like they're just playing an NPR interview over top of them.
That's the one I'm thinking of. I don't like that one either.
And the new Anna Monoguchi album, which is really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what else did I do? I don't know.
You just listen to albums?
I listen to albums.
That's all I did.
Yeah. I worked on this comic that I've got coming out starting next week.
Oh, yeah. Which one?
It's called Kid Cobbler.
Yeah.
It's with my friend Coleman. He's a great artist.
Coleman is sweet.
I wrote it. I'm doing air quotes because it's mostly silent. But yeah, it starts on Monday. Kidcobbler.tumblr.com.
Nice.
Plugs.
He's a good artist.
Yeah.
And a good guy.
Yeah, he's just a good guy.
He's a sweetheart.
And he listens to the show. Hey, Coleman, how's it going?
Hey. What's up, brother?
What's up, baby boy?
Baby boy.
Yeah, okay. Well, you guys want to do some news?
Yeah, sure.
All right, let's do it.
Today we're going to talk about the Brooklyn Comics and Graphics Festival being canceled.
Yeah. It's kind of unfortunate.
What happened?
I think that what really happened is Brooklyn Comics and Graphics Festival is kind of like, it's like SPX a little bit. It's a bunch of small press people. It takes place up in Brooklyn. I think it was just that it was run by three guys. And it was
inevitable burnout of any convention by anybody.
Yeah, it kept getting bigger and bigger. I know last year was crazy.
Yeah.
So, but three awesome guys, Dan Nadel, who does Picture Box, and Bill Cartolopoulos, who does programming for SPX and is just like a general comics smart guy.
Nah. Yep.
And Gabe Fowler runs Desert Island, which is a cool store up in Brooklyn.
Good trifecta there.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see it pop up again at some point. But but for now, it is not more.
Was there a reason for it or just low attendance?
No. I mean, the show is doing well. I think there's just like a lot of work.
Yeah. I couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
Well, that sucks. Well, in other news, in much better news, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. trailer premiered this week. There was like several. First, there was like a 7-minute one.
7 seconds.
7-second one.
And then there was
a 30-second one. And now there's like a 2-minute 40 seconds.
2 minutes, 40 seconds.
And that one, they were all great.
They were all great.
I had like One of my worries about it was, like, they talked about how, like, they didn't want to have a lot of superhero kind of stuff in it and just kind of focus on the weird side of the Marvel Universe. But in the first trailer, there's, like, a superhero or, like, somebody with superpowers. I was
it
like,
looks
oh,
like maybe it's Luke Cage.
Luke Cage. They said it wasn't Luke Cage.
Oh, okay. maybe
like, everybody
Cloak.
Speculated that it was Luke Cage.
I'm going Cloak.
Another thing I heard is that it may be his Rage from New Warriors, if you remember him.
No
one remembers.
Is that the guy's brother?
He's like a no, but he's like another street level like guy who wears like a a metal mask or something like that.
I thought maybe it was
Doctor Doom.
No, he doesn't wear a metal mask. He wears like a luchador mask, but he has like spikes and stuff coming out of him.
Wow.
I don't know. 90s. But yeah, he's very 90s.
That's Speedball.
I thought maybe it was the other Power Man, like the young one from.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But. Yeah, I don't know.
Either way, it's cool. Yeah, they said they'll have like kind of random cameos like that happening, which is awesome. And it looks like very Whedon-y.
And Agent Coulson is alive, you guys.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's the main thing.
Or is he?
It seems like he is.
Well, the trailer ends
hashtag
with
hashtag
like,
Coulson lives.
Hashtag
I ate the bones.
Yeah, I ate the bones. Gross. That's the worst hashtag ever.
It's that commercial is the worst thing ever.
Is it KFC?
Yeah, KFC, hashtag I ate the bones. Yeah. Original recipe boneless chicken.
Gross.
Yeah, so that's going to be on this fall, Tuesdays at 8 p.m. on ABC. Bam, 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 bam.
Buy some KFC chicken and sit down and watch it.
Hashtag Colson Lives, hashtag I Hate the Bones. And then in other news, I don't know. Well, this isn't really sad news. I think this is sort of inevitable news.
DC is canceling all their books. I mean, just a few of them. What's one? Threshold is gone. Legion of Superheroes is gone.
Surprising somewhat.
Demon Knights is gone. Mm-hmm. And Dial H is gone, which is the worst of those.
Very disappointing.
Yes.
I really like Dial H.
So I think Threshold is not a surprise. Legion of Superheroes has like kept it's a pretty steady book, and I feel like it's not going to drop anymore.
Such a institution.
The last few decades, though, it's never made it past like issue like 20 or 30.
Point. Yeah, I think the Mark Waid stuff made it to the 30s, maybe.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
And then I think the thing that happened with Dial H, which is unfortunate, is... It was too weird to be a DC book.
Yep.
But they wanted to make it a DC book, so they didn't make it a Vertigo book.
Right.
Yeah. And then I think it was a book that maybe, I think Karen Berger was editing.
Yeah.
She's leaving the company.
And
so.
She left like a few issues ago.
Yeah. Wow. So so I think it's just ending. At least, but they're going to wrap it up, and I think that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So didn't our intrepid reporter, Young Nick, count how many DC titles?
Oh, yeah, I tried. My count might have been wrong, but it was around 30 of the new original New 52
of the original
books are left.
Yeah.
Ugh,
so and a lot of those are crazy. About to be gone or just finished up,
like,
too.
Like 22 of them canceled.
Wow.
Which is pretty insane.
Good times.
But in good DC news,
yes.
I guess, depending on your point of view, DC is putting out a DC Universe versus Masters of the Universe comic, which is He-Man, in case you didn't know.
In case you didn't know. Or Orko, depending on who you know, who the main character is.
The characters in that show.
Alrighty.
It's a weird thing. They're all redesigned. I think that happened before in like the new He-Man series, which is a weird thing. They redesigned He-Man and all of those
characters. I would read this. Well, I'm going to read it anyway. But if this was drawn by Benjamin Mara... and I would be really excited to read that.
Right. Oh, what does Orko look like? I didn't see Orko.
Oh, I bet he's like
is he like wearing like a
he's like a woman and he's wearing like a corset.
Either that or he looks like a direwraith or something.
Yeah.
Oh god.
I bet he does.
Like a Nazgul.
Yeah.
That's gross. I hope he's just goofy.
I'm gonna look at it.
Is Snarf gonna be in it?
As soon as we take a break, I'm gonna go over there.
Thundercat.
I was like, wait, is Snarf?
I like that you would like hesitated. You're like, I don't know if Snarf is in it.
I was about to be like, is Mumra
using it? Oh man, that would be awesome.
I feel like Snarf and Spider Man would be really funny together.
Throw in some snorts.
Be awesome. Yeah. Well, that's it for news, right?
That's about it. I think
I'm like, we're rushing through this episode because I want to go watch The Office season finale.
Nice.
Or series finale.
Yeah, and I can't watch it for another 2 weeks
because Nick's girlfriend is in Russia.
Yeah, she's like, don't watch it without me. I was like, oh man,
terrible.
You're like, just watch it in Russia. She's like, it doesn't come on here for 2 years.
They're on season 3.
He's like, I'm already watching it right now.
Yeah.
But well, she's, I mean, she obviously doesn't have time for that.
Yeah.
Like, I got stuff to do.
Well, you guys want to just do some reviews then?
We got
good stuff to talk about this week. Yeah, by the way, No questions. Nobody sent us any questions.
Oh, wow, really?
Where's the hate?
Zero questions.
We even went onto Facebook. We're like, send us some questions.
No.
331 people saw the post.
And we know you're reading these things.
I know Aaron sent us a question, but it like disappeared into the ether. I'm going to ask him to send it. Right?
Aaron, resend your question. It's going to be the only question we get for the rest of the year.
He asked me it on purpose, and it was pretty funny. I mean, on purpose. In person. On purpose.
And on purpose.
Yeah. He asked you by accident.
Yeah.
I just said something on top of my mind.
Oh, what?
Accidental question.
All right.
Oh, well, there we go.
Next up,
some reviews.
We love comics, they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
All right, up first of this week, we've got Adventure Time Playing with Fire. This is an original Adventure Time graphic novel.
OGN.
So exciting.
This is written by Danielle Corsetto, who does...
Girls with Slingshots.
Yeah, there you go, Girls with Slingshots.
Mm-hmm.
And then the art is by Zach Sterling.
Yep.
And then who's Meredith McLaren?
Don't know, but that's the backup short weird adventure thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that we'll talk a little bit about that too.
Which has a name, Adventure Time with BMO.
There you go. Yeah,
short backup.
So, I think I'm probably the biggest Adventure Time guy at the table here.
Definitely. I still have never seen an episode.
Okay, well there you go. It'll be an interesting perspective to get on this then. So, this is about Finn. You know, I'm not going to explain.
Wait, who?
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to explain the entirety. Well, I will explain Adventure Time.
I'll explain
so,
it. There's...
So Adventure Time takes place thousands of years after the Great Mushroom War, which was basically when a nuclear bomb dropped on the world.
Really?
And reset society back to, like, its basics.
Right.
Everybody sort of mutated and all these different creatures and things popped up and kind of developed new societies that are based on like weird things. Like there's like a candy kingdom and
ice kingdom
and Finn,
the fire kingdom.
And the fire kingdom, which is where the flame princess comes from. And Finn is the only human in the world, except maybe Susan Strong, but we don't know that for sure yet. And he has a dog, Jake, who can like turn into stuff. Right. And it's pretty awesome. So that's what Adventure Time is for anybody that doesn't.
Just to be clear, I didn't get any of that from this graphic novel.
No. But I don't know. I just wanted to see if I could explain Adventure Time.
Well done.
So this is about Finn and his relationship with the Flame Princess, who is a character that he has a relationship with in the cartoon.
They might be going out.
Yeah. They have a sort of on again off again relationship. She has a very bad temper.
Right. A fiery temper.
Yeah, and her dad wants her to be evil. But the main thing in this is that Finn gets trapped by a fortune teller.
What the main thing is they go to the Carnival Kingdom.
Well, yeah, sure. They go to the Carnival Kingdom.
Which is like an awesome
Finn
carnival.
Gets trapped by a fortune teller. And then the story shifts to sort of the Flame Princess's point of view. And she has to solve all these puzzles to find him.
Yeah, and she kind of really likes Finn because he's like this heroic adventuring guy. And so for her, she's always kind of taken a back seat to that. And now she's in the position that she has to like take the lead and try to save him.
Yeah, change. Like she doesn't really understand what it is to try to be a hero.
Right.
And how the rules work.
Yeah. And like a lot of Adventure Time stories,
it's really weird.
She doesn't actually even quite learn a lesson in this. Usually people don't learn lessons. And that's one of the great things about the show.
Right.
But yeah, it's really fun. I mean, it turns into a very basic like quest story, but with a lot of traditional Adventure Time humor and, you know, traditional relatively to the show.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really enjoyed it. There's actually a big moment in this that I felt like was kind of important to their relationship, and people that follow the show are very invested in that.
Yeah, there's a few, I think. Definitely.
Yeah, so I'd say if you're a fan of the show, definitely check this out. One weird thing is it's in black and white.
Yeah.
And it's such a colorful show.
Yeah.
That I at first I was like, oh, black and white, but then it's great. It works really well. Yeah, it does work really well. So
they got some nice shading with the grays and the dots.
Yeah. And there's a backup story in this, I think. it's about BMO.
Right.
And
I really didn't know who he was.
He's Finn's sidekick. He's a video game machine.
He's clearly a Game Boy.
Yeah, he's a Game Boy, basically. but he has external controllers, so he's slightly different than a Game Boy. But, yeah, I found those actually really hard to follow and understand.
They're done as four panels per page going down in, like, a column.
Yeah,
so, there's half the page is like a big drawing.
There's a name of that style. It's like a Japanese thing that they do in manga. But
did not work for me either.
Yeah, it seemed like each one was supposed to be a gag on its own, and then it was supposed to create a bigger story, but I didn't get the bigger
story. It was hard to follow.
I didn't get a lot of the gags.
Okay. Yeah. But the main story is great. You know, I watched a good amount of Adventure Time. I'm not like all of it or as much as you. But yeah, I thought that it kept the humor intact from the show. There's definitely at least one or two places that where I was cracking up. Like their excitement over going to like Carnival Land was pretty hilarious.
Carnival Land.
And I thought they did a good job of showing you like their relationship. If even if you haven't watched the show, you get like a good sense of that they really like each other, but they're kind of like I don't know about this, you know, because they both have problems.
Yeah, well, like the fact that she sets him on fire if they try to make out.
Right. But she's also she's got like that crazy temper, and he's kind of like all about the adventures and doesn't have time for love.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's cool. It's cool.
Yeah. So Jared, not knowing the show at all, did you enjoy it?
I loved it. Yeah. It was so good. Yeah, I think the strength is I assume these are written like they're written on the show, but just like really, really good characterization and like great dialogue and such a ridiculous quest that they end up going on full of like there's a puzzle cave with all these like weird like traditional, you know, fantasy tropes that they kind of circumvent or just do wrong. And
they're all sort of
really good quest.
They're all sort of aware of it too, which is great. Yeah, Jared, I think we should set you a challenge to watch the first season of Adventure Time. It's on Netflix. So.
Oh. Do it. Yeah. See what I can do.
Do it. All right. Up next, we've got Avengers, The Enemy Within, number one. This is written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, who writes both of the series that this is a crossover with Captain Marvel and Avengers Assemble.
Is she writing Avengers Assemble now?
Yes.
I did not know that.
And art by Scott Hepburn.
Audrey Hepburn's son.
Indeed.
No.
Catherine Hepburn's son?
No.
Bob Hepburn's son.
So, Avengers Enemy Within is pretty much just another issue of Captain Marvel, feels like.
Yeah.
I haven't really kept up with Captain Marvel, even though I like the writing a lot. Just some of the art turned me off, and I kind of fell off of it.
And the art's good now, though, actually, in the main series.
Yeah, and the art in this is pretty good.
I should say this is coming right on the heels of Avengers Assemble being canceled. So Avengers Assemble is over after this crossover.
Right. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So the basic story is, I guess there's been an ongoing thing in the comic where Miss Marvel has like a tumor.
Captain Marvel.
What did I say, Miss Marvel? Oh, yeah, she used to be Miss Marvel. Captain Marvel's got a tumor, and she's not allowed to use her powers because it'll exasperate it, and she'll die. So she's trying not to use powers, but then keeps getting in these situations where she kind of has to, and she doesn't want to not use her powers. But most of the issue is just her and Spider-Woman kind of like walking around talking about stuff, and then like the wackiest villains appear. Yeah. Who are like all
a trio of female wrestlers, super villains.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
And you start to get a sense that, you know, something bigger is behind her condition and everything that's happened to her. But it's pretty fun. At the end, they're like, you know, the Avengers are like, you don't have to do this alone. So, you know, that's kind of how they show up and start helping her, I guess.
Yeah, you were saying that that like most of it is just kind of them talking, Spider-Woman and Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually the strength of this. I think Kelly Sue DeConnick's dialogue is great. Like, she's got a very, she's got a very natural style to her dialogue. It's very smart and like
very
sharp.
Funny.
Yeah, and really funny. And yeah, I think she kind of does what I think Bendis used to do better than he does now, which is just like have these great interactions between characters and really, you know, accentuate their personalities.
Yeah.
And the art, I thought the art was really good, too. I don't know this artist, but he's got a very like sort of cartoony style.
Yeah.
Or very exaggerated, at least, you know, sort of caricaturist. Yeah. And everybody interprets the new Captain Marvel's hair differently in the way he does it. It's pretty good. But, I thought the whole thing was fun and just well-written. When Thor shows up, it's pretty hilarious.
And there's dinosaurs.
And they're definitely dinosaurs. And, I like this thing they're doing with Captain Marvel. I think it harkens back to the old Captain Marvel story, like the death of Captain Marvel.
Right.
Which I think is pretty interesting. Yeah. And, I enjoyed this issue.
It was good.
Yep.
Oh, you, Jared, you liked it?
I did.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's good. If you haven't read Captain Marvel,
it's good stuff.
It's pretty easy to get into.
It's a good jumping on point.
Yeah, I'm behind on both of these series, and it was really easy to just jump in. They do a good job of explaining without you feeling like you're being explained to.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Up next, we've got a really, really good book. This is Dream Merchant number one. This is written by Nathan Edmondson, who writes Who is Jake Ellis and other stuff that's not as good as Who is Jake Ellis. And I mean, that's true, right? Like, his Marvel stuff hasn't been that great.
Yeah. What did he write for Marvel?
He's like writing Ultimate
Iron Man.
No, or Ultimate Iron Man.
That's the only thing he wrote. Yeah, Ultimate Iron Man, which was very good. And he wrote Grifter. for a little while.
Activity's good though, and but who is Jake Ellis and where are Jake Ellis?
Where are Jake Ellis?
So good.
And they're both great.
The art in this is by Konstantin Novosadov, who like is just some guy that came out of nowhere and was like,
hey,
I'm incredible.
Yeah. He's like, hey, I'll probably be one of the best artists you've ever seen.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, do you like Tradmore? Well,
yeah, exactly. He's like,
kick him to the curb because I'm here now.
I'm pulling a Tradmore and blowing your mind from nowhere.
But so the art's obviously. We all love the art, but the story was really cool too.
So this is basically a guy who's in some sort of insane asylum, but he's kind of there maybe voluntarily because he's got this horrible sleep disorder where just like every time he's awake, like he's falling asleep and just having problems and nightmares and stuff. And then he's got a nice relationship with the girl who volunteers at the shelter or the insane asylum helping him out. And then creepy supernatural stuff begins happening.
Yeah, so the main thing is he basically has a mental problem where he can't differentiate. He has these vivid nightmares, and he can't differentiate between waking life and sleeping life.
Yeah.
And so when he's awake, he sometimes he thinks he's asleep, and he's basically going absolutely crazy. And then those two things start to merge together.
Yeah.
It's like things he sees in his
dreams,
he starts seeing in the real world. And also things that he sees in his dreams start seeing him in his dreams and recognizing him and stuff.
Yeah. So he starts feeling like maybe, I guess, like when he's sleeping, he's actually in the real world, or maybe not.
Yeah, it's actually pretty interesting because I feel like you don't know when you're reading
this. Right.
And so he develops this relationship with this this girl that works there.
And they
start getting chased and they run away.
Then weird monstery things show up at
Dire Wraiths show up.
Orko shows up.
They're kind of like Nazgul.
Yeah, they're the Nazgul. I just like to say Nazgul. It's ridiculous. It's interesting because I think it incorporates a lot of different things. It's like there's kind of a supernatural thing and it has horror elements to it, and it also becomes like almost like a buddy action adventure thing at points
and there's a little bit of like a maybe sci-fi kind of thing to it because it's almost like a power. They have these like powers, dreamlike powers. It's almost like they're in a dream and they can control what's happening. And there's like a cool little like mystery that's introduced where it's like he's basically like remembering something he's not supposed to or that nobody's supposed to like that. And it's cool. I liked it a lot. And the art is great. I didn't realize that he actually does all of the art. Like, he does the coloring and the inking.
Oh, really?
Like,
oh, that's great.
It just says art by him.
Because the coloring is pretty sweet,
insane.
Too.
It's so good.
Yeah, overall I enjoyed it. Here and there were a couple little things. I felt like there were a couple little bits of repeated dialogue that felt a little clunky at times. And there's definitely a part when he finds out that this girl is like a juvenile delinquent and he gets like really mad and she's like, you're in an insane asylum, dude. Like, what are you even talking about now?
That's what she says.
Yeah.
So that was perfect.
Yeah, it just seemed a little out of character compared to the other stuff that he had done.
Yeah.
Story. And this girl also seems a little too willing to accept some of this stuff.
Yeah. Like,
she's like, all right, I'll run away with you.
But that's part of her thing, that she's clearly got problems too.
Right. So. Yeah. But otherwise,
yeah, those are very, very, awesome. Very small things. Yeah. Overall, this was great. The art, it looks a little like Tradmore. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Guy Davis in a way too.
And a little bit of, what's his name? The guy does, he does all the, he did New Deadwardians, and he does all the...
I.N.J. Colhard.
Yeah. Reminds me a lot of that, too.
And a little bit of James Herron, too, who's maybe a lesser-known guy who did BPRD. But the art's fantastic. It's very moody, and it's cool he did the lighting and stuff, too.
The coloring is insane.
Because the lighting is fantastic and really creates
just
a great atmosphere.
All around.
Yeah, it's a good book. And it's double-sized.
That's the thing about it. It's twice as long because it takes a long time to build all this up. There's a lot going on, but then you get... double the length, so it does a good
job. Still for $3.50.
If you guys love this like we did, Nathan Edmondson himself will be at our DC store on June 29th as an appearance.
Pretty excited about that.
Yeah,
Tuesdays this fall on ABC.
Where does he actually live?
I have no idea.
We'll tweet his address later.
Tweet his address.
All right, up next in the duo of dream books
category.
We've got Dream Thief number 1. This is written by Jai Nitz, and I feel like I know that name, but I don't know who that is.
I don't know, but I'm holding the wrong book.
You are holding.
Wasn't he the guy from
from Spawn.
Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
Spawn? I think it's Michael Jai White.
Oh, yeah. That's the guy who gets, like, the pencil through his eyeball in Batman.
No, Queer Eye for a Straight Guy. What was that dude's name?
Jai?
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I'm just saying.
RuPaul? Is this Drag Race?
Drag Race?
No.
I have no idea. And the art in this is by Greg Smallwood, who I also don't know, but who is a very good artist.
Great artist, yeah.
Yeah. Nick, I know you love Dream Thief.
I love Dream Thief. Well, I don't love it, but it's really good. I liked it a lot.
I loved it.
The only problem I had with it is that the main character is a little bit of a jerk.
All of the characters. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the main guy especially is, like, really bad. But basic gist of the story is this guy wakes up from, like, a crazy night out, and he's like, where am I? What happened last night? And you see that he's got this crazy relationship with his girlfriend, and he's got this friend who's, like, an ex-football player, and they go to, like, an art exhibit, and the next day he wakes up with the mask on, and something terrible has happened. And basically that's kind of the keeps happening. He keeps falling asleep and waking up in really crazy situations wearing this crazy mask, and he doesn't quite know what's going on. But everything that's happening is really bad.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, he kills a lot of people. Yeah. He kills a drug dealer.
So a couple of the weird things I thought, like, so his girlfriend, basically their apartment was invaded by a home invader.
Right.
This is awful.
And so she's, like, traumatized by that. And so she won't have sex with him. So he's going around and, like, sleeping around.
Right.
And he's like, what? I got needs. And it's like the douchiest dude in the world.
Yeah. And later he's like, what are you worried about? Not like you got raped or anything.
It's yeah. Like, it's like,
so terrible.
Yeah. It's pretty rough. So obviously this guy's going to go on this kind of, journey of redemption. I hope so.
Hopefully.
And when he gets the mask, it's kind of funny because basically he buys, like, some super weed and he's smoking, and he thinks that, like, what happened to him,
like, been laced with something.
So the first thing he does was go, like, find this drug dealer. I don't know. It was a fun story. It's just, like, it gets a little twisted at times.
Yeah.
But
I thought that part was great. All those parts just, like, kept getting weirder and weirder. And
but the art in this was the thing.
I loved, like,
really?
Yeah,
I love the art so much.
The art was amazing.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's the thing that I really liked.
No, because I really like the story, because he's doing a lot with it. That there's basically three narratives going on at the same time, where there's a letter that parts of are being read. He's starting from literally the first caption. The second one is his internal dialogue and just, like, him trying to process what had happened as things are going on. And then, like, the just people talking back and forth, and it's all, like, fitting together and... I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, I thought the cool stuff, he did some really cool stuff with the art. There's, like, one page where, like, all the panels are in a question mark, and then something crazy happens in the next page, and they're all panels, like, a big exclamation point.
Yep.
And then there's
one that's, like, a chutes and ladders. It's like he's getting memories from somebody else.
Well, there's a cool thing where he's kind of getting memories, and he's kind of getting abilities from people. Like, he gets, like, the memories of this boxer, and so he learns how to fight. And when he's fighting, whenever there's, like, a sound, what do you call it? Like a sound effect written on the page, inside the page, you get a drawing of, like, the boxer. It's really cool. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but
It's like a huge sound effect that covers part of the art. So it's, like, says slam, and it's where it covers up his face. The inside of that word noise is the drawing of the guy, like, overlaid over him.
Yeah, it's pretty
cool. Yeah, which is a thing that I think I've seen J.H. Williams do that before.
Right,
but then, like, most people can't do
that's
stuff
the thing.
Like
yeah,
that.
Like, right. So few people try this. It's amazing.
So the guy that did the art, Greg Smallwood, Konstantin Novozadov, who did Dream Merchant, he did all the coloring, all the lettering, all the finishes, and everything.
That's great. Yep.
And it looks great. He like switches up styles in a way that works really well when he's flashing things back, or when he does crazy things like the kind of shoots and ladders page. It's like he knows what he's doing, so it reads the right way. Like, people do things like that, and sometimes it can muddy storytelling,
formally tricky. And yeah, this is just
this just everything flows really well, and. It's colored really well. The coloring reminds me a lot of Fatale.
The art reminds me of Sean Phillips too a lot.
Yeah, a lot like Sean Phillips. And there was somebody else that it reminded. And it reminds me of Chris Samnee a lot too.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is like, I mean, it's those two guys
right, are like the best.
Right. So I enjoyed it. I
I loved it.
The main character really put me off.
Oh, really?
And usually I don't care.
He's definitely a giant jerk.
Yeah, usually, yeah. It was just like, and some of the dialogue was like a little, it was like, I felt like going for a little bit of like a shock factor.
Right.
Cheesy.
Right. Yeah.
But overall it was great. I'm excited to read the next issue.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Got a few more things. Next up is Mobile Suit Gundam, The Origin, Volume 1. Activation hardcover graphic novel. This is published by Vertical, which is amazing because I would never think Gundam would get treatment from Vertical, who do a bunch of the Tezuka books and a bunch of other awesome stuff.
Now, I know you love you some Gundam.
I do love Gundam. Well, Makuros is my name.
Makuros. That's terrible. Okay, so tell us what you thought of this.
Oh, well, I thought it was great. I do want to say it's drawn by Yoshikazu Yasuhiko, who is one of the production designers on the original thing. This came out
After the animated.
Yeah, this actually came out. So usually in Japan, what'll happen is there'll be a manga, and if that's popular, they'll do an anime of it. But Gundam was just an anime, and then it was popular, so they did a manga.
That's cool.
And I think this book is awesome.
Yeah, like Kevin saying Vertical treatment, like it's in a really nice little hardcover, and there's like all these like essays at the back and interviews with the guys who worked on it, and they
reproduce the color and pages and stuff, which is great. So the main story of Gundam is it's in the future, and humanity is colonizing other planets and sort of building these space colonies, and some of the more populated ones that are a little bit further out declare independence from the world, basically from Earth. And so this group, I can't remember what they call themselves.
The Zeku.
Well, the Zaku are the robots. Yeah, the Principality of Zeon.
Yeah.
They declare war against Earth, and then kind of the main story of this is, and which is also the main story of the first season of the show, is they're attacking Earth and also some of these other colonies.
Yeah, the space colonies.
Yeah,
it was awesome.
And that's pretty much it.
Well, they attack the colonies, and then one of these colonies, they're building like a prototype. Gundam,
I should say, yeah, yeah,
which is like a giant robot.
It's like a robotic battle suit.
Yeah, which is the classic RX-78 Gundam that everybody knows and loves from Gundam 007.
Right, but if you've never seen Gundam,
I forget that people don't know what a Gundam is. But yeah, so basically, as to defend themselves, the Earth or the Federation are building. These giant robots, or in this one, just one, I think. Giant
and then
robot.
The space colony that it's on gets attacked, and everybody kind of scatters, and the only person left is like the son of one of the creators of the Gundam, who's like he's like 17 or something like that.
Yeah, but he's like a whiz.
Yeah, and he takes control of the Gundam and starts blowing robots to smithereens.
Yep, and then there's a lot of Zaku versus Gundam battles.
Yeah,
and it's great.
It's awesome.
Yeah, so this is a classic, like, the Gundam suit is so advanced that even though he's, like, the inexperienced kid, he's still got the technical know-how to overcome more talented enemies, but it's still, he's always, like, trying to figure out what to do, and it's always, like, can he pull this off?
Yeah.
Even though he's being surrounded by, like, six guys in battle suits. And
yeah, and it's that kind of drama that I feel like Japanese comics are great at. Of underdogs against the odds.
Yep.
And they're, you know, whether they're a ragtag soccer team or, like, whatever.
Or if they're
kids in giant robots. And then, of course, sort of a lot of giant robot stuff came out of this, like Gunbuster and all that stuff.
Right.
But, so that's kind of the story. The art is great.
Yes.
It's that 70s Japanese style that's so awesome. Yeah.
The fights are really well choreographed, and
I had some problems with the fights. Like, I felt like really they're like, oh, remember this awesome scene in the anime? Look at how cool. And it just the actiony parts where it's not just like something about to happen, but where they're showing like several pages of like things exploding or people moving and shooting is a little chunky. Like, for me it was a little messy.
I can see that. But it does have a nice sort of like a kinetic energy to it. Yeah. While you're reading it, and I feel like it's still exciting.
No, yeah.
But overall, I enjoyed it. I love the color bits as well.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's crazy to see the only problem I had with the color stuff is that like when it goes back to black and white.
Yeah,
You get that with everything though. Like in Dragon Ball and
right,
all that
Kira
stuff
or whatever.
But overall, I think it's a good book. It's a really beautifully put together book. It's
they have a good setup. You know, where like the prince of the Zeon forces is like, you know, kind of the talented but nefarious enemy that they're slowly building up a relationship with just because they face each other so many times, and they do a good job with the characters too. So
It's rad.
Yeah, and I'd say you don't have to know anything about Gundam to read this.
I didn't.
No,
yeah.
No, I mean, it's like the beginning of Gundam, yeah.
Yeah.
You can get into it.
But you should also watch the first season of Gundam. It's yeah, so that's Mobile Suit Gundam The Origin, Volume 1, Activation Hardcover Graphic Novel, published by Vertical in 2013. All right, so we just got two more books left. Up first is William and the Lost Spirit. This is by Gwen DeBonneval and Matthew Bonholm. Bonham.
Bonham.
Oh, there you go. Bonham. Jared knows.
This book was off the chain.
It's true. I assume we were supposed to review this like 3 weeks in a row, and I never ever read it because we kept selling out of it. And today I didn't read it because I was reading this Gundam book.
Jared and I read it.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Tell us what it's about, Jared.
So this was a 3-book series in France, I presume, that came out finally all together. And it's just a straight up medieval story with kids who's like their father's dead, and so there's like raiders out, like bandits out in the countryside, and so their mother is basically interested in marrying this new guy. So it's like the classic stepfather thing. And then this very strange possible knight guy shows up, a guy who's possibly a knight but is kind of like a little edgy and scruffy, and but can really take care of himself. And from there, the story begins shifting into a really weird supernatural direction involving like all the classical like monsters of the Middle Ages. So it's not like they're meeting dragons and stuff, but
yeah,
like, the things that would be drawn in like illuminated manuscripts of like, if you go to far Asia, you will see men with heads on their chest and no necks, right. And
yeah, the basic,
like, really weird stuff.
The basic gist kind of is like everybody's kind of like the main parts of society are all like super religious.
Oh yeah.
And they like fear like the heathenistic creatures that live like further out. And the main character, William, his mom just got remarried to this guy that he doesn't like because his dad just died, and he's not sure, and his sister doesn't believe that his dad dies, so she goes to look for him.
Right, and disappears.
And so, yeah, he takes it upon himself to go find her and their father together. And it takes some crazy turns.
Yeah, like this knight comes along, and he's just like I said, he's really like, he does what needs to be done, but he's still got an honor about him. And then they run into like a traveling troubadour who's like, kind of even more sketchy, is like kind of the rogue of the company and just does whatever.
And there's definitely three distinct acts, and it's hard to talk about the last one without giving away a lot of it.
Yeah.
But basically, you know, in the first part, he starts on his quest and he meets this knight, and then something happens to him where he may or may not have gotten killed, and he wakes up in this crazy magical world, and he begins looking for his daughter again, and all these dog people show up, and there's crazy like half human, half like lion people, and all sorts of crazy things.
It really delves into like the mythology of the Middle Ages.
And then there's a really crazy twist in the beginning of the third part, which I can't really talk about without spoiling the whole thing. But
so we'll just say it's a really cool story. Yeah. The other thing is the art is amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
It's, what do you say, Kevin? Like largely penciled. And then colors on top of it.
What book are you guys talking about?
It's very European.
Yeah. There's amazing, like, all the monsters
really good.
And animals and stuff in here look great. There's a great... he'll do stuff like where the sky is just like a penciled out shade that's then colored. I can't even describe it, but...
There's a lot of cool things.
Yeah.
His creature design is pretty rad, too.
Yeah. And then, like, really, really good coloring on this as well. Yeah, it looks kind of like a classic cartoon.
It's cool. It's a very original kind of adventure story that I hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
And it takes some twists that I did not expect to happen.
Yeah, you have no idea what's going to happen in this book.
And it's a little episodic. Like, he'll go here and this will happen. He'll go there and something else happens and he moves on. But overall, it's great. And the finale of it is pretty cool.
Yeah, the art's got like it definitely takes a lot of influence from Jeff Smith.
Yeah, it's definitely very Jeff Smithish.
And then also, I can't remember the name of the guy that draws Siegfried, but
Alex Ellis.
Yeah,
it's got that kind of Disney style.
Yeah, it's got kind of a classic Disney style. But then, yeah, like Jared said, the pencil shading and stuff gives it kind of an organic feel. It's the art's fantastic. Also, some of it's very Charles Vess-ish as well.
Oh yeah, there you go.
You should read it.
Check it out.
And Kevin
Chiu. Yeah, I was trying to zone out while you guys were talking about it, so I didn't actually hear what the plot was, and it worked.
It's cool.
I was on my phone.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. William and the Lost Spirit, me and Jared say highest recommendation.
My highest recommendation.
I would say highest recommendation. Yes.
Yeah.
Kevin gives the highest recommendation just based on the art.
I'll let you guys know next week. I'm going to read it for sure.
There you go.
All right, we got one more book. This is Red Handed, The Fine Art of Strange Crimes. This is by Matt Kent, who is currently writing and drawing Mind Management and is also...
Recently wrote an issue of Wolverine and the X-Men.
Did he?
Yeah. What?
That's cool. That. And he also wrote Frankenstein, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Which was great.
And Super Spy, I'd say, is probably a big thing that a lot of people... Well, Mind Management
and
is
three, big, three story.
Three story.
He currently co-writes...
The Tooth.
He co-writes some DC book. I can't remember which one, though. Anyway.
Yeah. So he does that.
He does that.
So Red Handed, The Fine Art of Strange Crimes is an interesting book. It's sort of set up as a series of... seemingly disparate
cases.
Short stories, yeah, cases of this this guy Detective Gould,
basically Dick Tracy,
yeah, and who is named after Chester Gould, the
right.
creator of Tracy.
I totally didn't get that.
and he's kind of the world's greatest detective, and to the point where they even compare him, saying he's better than fictional detectives like Sherlock Holmes,
right? Yeah. He's like, and he's never not solved a case.
Yeah, yeah. So there hasn't been an unsolved murder. In I can't remember what town he's in.
At least 10 years. Red Wheelbarrow.
Oh, there you go. Oh yeah, yeah. That's important.
But at the same time, like, crime is on the rise.
Yeah,
it's pretty crazy.
It's just like people get caught, but of course, people are still giving into doing terrible things.
So there are a couple of framing devices in this. One is the Detective Gould strips that would run in like a newspaper, and the way those are presented is really interesting. They'll start and end each case, and they're kind of presented like they would be like the originals of what would have run in the paper. So.
Right. Right.
The way he draws it is like with blue line and you can
like scotch tape over where it was put together on a newspaper page.
And then you'll have the main story, which, you know, can vary from a woman who is obsessed with stealing chairs from the places she works, or a woman who is compiling an entire novel out of, you know, words from signs and things like that.
There's just a lot of like super interesting crimes that are like.
Yeah,
I would have never thought
often
of
less crimes and more just like a peculiar case that he has to investigate.
And then some of it's more just like, oh, a getaway driver that, you know, is, you know, he did his last job. Or there's like a guy who is an elevator operator that like takes upskirts of people
by
getting them stuck between floors on elevators.
Yeah.
So the other framing device they use is these conversations that it seems like Gould is having with a mysterious person. And all those pages are completely black except for the dialogue.
Right.
And they're kind of having
like
a philosophical discussion about the nature of crime.
And interrogation. Like you feel like they're in some room just like, you know, he's facing someone down. And,
yeah. Right. And,
but it's just, them talking about it philosophically.
Yeah, like, you know, he's saying there's no such thing as a victimless crime. And she's saying, you know, is it better to starve to death or to steal a loaf of bread? Or, you know.
Yeah, and he's very like, no, law is law, breaking it is crime. And she's like, but what if, you know, this? And it basically goes on. But it's very interesting conversation because half the time the detective seems right. Like, you agree with what he is saying. And then the person he's talking to also has a valid point of view. And it's very interesting how they're both, like, you don't have a clear, you don't side with anybody because they're both kind of right.
Yeah, like the guy he's talking to seems crazy, but like also like you agree with what he says a lot of the time.
Like an intelligent criminal, you know, where you're like, oh, this person's crazy, but, you know, they obviously know what they're doing. And it's like you see how stiff Gould is about his theories on crime and stuff, but it's still they're debating some very good points.
Right.
And then it'll break and go into a new case. And slowly these interrogations are building up over time. And you're like, where is this all going?
Yeah, like, who is this person that he's talking to?
Right, and why is this important? And then you start to realize that, like, and the other thing is that Gould's wife is kind of like his, you know, very supportive partner. And then you realize that she's kind of getting tired of him always off doing his thing and being less concerned with their marriage and their relationship. And she starts to try to do like run an art gallery, and like you slowly realize that all these things are starting to build and tie together, and it's
awesome. I thought the ending was so good.
He has these few clues that are kind of
that, like,
leading him to something, but he doesn't understand what. And then, it all comes together in like a really crazy way really unexpected.
Yeah.
And certain characters in the book aren't quite what you think they are. And it was really fascinating.
Yeah, I was shocked by the ending. I thought it was great. Yeah. Really, really good.
Really awesome.
Yeah, I think what Kint does really well in this book is he takes structures of crime stories, like the kind of things we all know,
right,
and he applies them in different ways, like in ways that you wouldn't expect, like like the interrogation stuff. It's like it's not really somebody who's committing crimes,
right,
but they're all kind of like circumventing like the traditional tropes of the I don't know, it's really interesting just the way he does it. The whole book is like that. It's, you know, the way it moves around through different types of narrative. I mean, that only two of we only talked about three of the different ways they tell a story in this. There are about three or four other ways as well. There are things that seem completely separate that end up being really important. And before I read this, because Nick read it before I did, he was like, hey, make sure you read everything, like everything in this is important. And it's true. Even something like the back of a science fiction novel that you wouldn't think is important ends up being important later on.
Like exquisitely crafted, like really well thought out.
Something that Matt Kint does well. He does the same thing in mind management, I think, and it's something that's sort of singular to him, and it really makes this work and become something more than you would expect it to be.
Super awesome,
super highest recommendation.
This will be in our talks for best of the year, I would think. That's it. End on a high note. There are a lot of good books this week. There wasn't really anything that we didn't like. I mean, there was, but we didn't talk about that stuff. Can I say Nova number 4 that came out this week was really, really good. Everybody should be reading Nova.
Wolverine and X-Men that came out this week was incredible.
The next issue is going to be good, too. This big new storyline.
Right.
Stuff. Yeah. Cool. Well, that's it for this week's podcast. And we will see you guys next time.
See you later.